Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Parker, and I'm coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. This is the Medical Whistleblower Show, and I am happy to be able to present to you a very interesting show in regards to the program that was called Straight, Inc., which many people recognize as being a program that had, for many years, mistreated children in its care. I have with me tonight two persons who are former Straight survivors, and they are going to be sharing their personal stories with us. They can tell us exactly what had happened to them on a personal level, and they also have been in contact with persons from Straight facilities, other persons who have also experienced this problem with the Straight abuse. Now, Straight was originally started after the Seed, which was an Atlanta group, parent group. The Seed conducted business for only 4 years before it became the subject of a Senate investigation. And the Senate believed that its methods were potentially harmful and subsequently shut it down. But two of the parents whose children were involved in the Seed, Mel Sembler and Joe Zappala, started Straight in 1976. And so the Straight program directly came out of the parent group of Seed. Straight's techniques, which had originally been used on the more serious drug addicts, quickly became used on persons who were not, at least in the sense of physical addiction, addicts at all, and many young teenagers who had barely experimented or even didn't experiment with controlled substances. And Straight used techniques such as sleep and food deprivations, beatings, humiliations, and many other problems for human rights. And eventually they expanded chapters to Texas, Ohio, California, D.C., Virginia, and Georgia. So this particular Straight program was eventually investigated by numerous federal investigations and state investigations. But today we are going to actually talk to persons who have firsthand knowledge of some of the mistreatment that happened to people who were incarcerated in Straight, Inc. I have with me today Marcus, who was in Straight, Inc. from November 1985 through February 1987. He was only 16 when he went originally into the program. And he has organized Straight Survivors and has written a letter and a petition requesting apology for those who organized and funded and promoted Straight. They have actually received an apology from one executive staff member. And he has moved on with his life, but he's with us today to share with us his concerns for Straight, Inc. Will you want to come on and tell us a little more, Marcus?
Yeah, and I didn't actually write the letter. I just came up with the vision of formally asking for an apology. The letter was written by a survivor whose name is Chris, who operates the website SurvivingStraightInc.com.
Okay.
And she very eloquently wrote the letter. And, well, the other thing on my mind, the Seed operated in St. Petersburg, Florida, I believe.
Yes.
And, well, thanks for inviting us onto the show, Jeanette.
And we also have a second person with us today who also is a straight survivor. And his name is Todd. And he had been in the Greater Washington, D.C. Straight Inc., which is located in Springfield, Virginia. He entered that facility in March of 1985 when he was just 16 years old. And he didn't end up leaving the control of Straight Inc. until after February 87. He has, of course, a great deal to tell us about the way in which children were treated in that facility and specifically how he himself was treated. You want to say a few words there, Todd?
Well, I would just say, in general, I would characterize Straight as in violation of my human dignity. And if I was an 18-year-old, if I'd have been an adult and they would have treated me that way, there would have been federal charges they would have had to answer to. But because I was a minor, I really had no recourse, and I didn't have the constitutional rights to defend myself. So I would consider, just in general, I would consider Straight Incorporated a criminal organization.
Now, you are aware that according to international law and international ethical and moral considerations, children do have rights, human rights, mm-hmm. of their personhood. And although parents are supposed to protect their children's human rights, in some instances, and especially in the Straight program, that was not always done, right?
Right. I mean, that was really the biggest problem, was that there was no recourse for you if you were in there and you were under 18. You know, there was no way for you to contact any adult with a reasonable mind who could help you.
Now, there was a deluge of lawsuits, state investigations, which lasted more than a decade. And the Massachusetts chapter of Straight was forced to pay several thousand dollars after a judge found them guilty of false imprisonment in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And I think two former Straight clients won lawsuits against Florida on the same grounds. There were many instances of children who attempted suicide or actually were successful at suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the mother of Michael Daniels, who was 17 years old, said that her son was driven to a psychic breakdown and paranoid schizophrenia as a result of what happened to him.
I believe that.
That was a court case.
That sounds like something that I would expect, having mm-hmm. been through the program myself and experienced a similar type of breakdown after I graduated.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you hear, oh, so-and-so committed suicide, you don't stop and wonder, oh, well, I wonder why. When you hear about somebody from Straight committing suicide, you just think, oh, you know, another one. I don't know what the suicide rates are. I would love to see a study done of how many have actually committed suicide that were in Straight. Of the 30 or so people I've heard of after getting out of Straight, I guess about 10 of them were suicides. And even if those 10 were the only 10 that committed suicide that I knew in there, that's still an epidemic proportion of suicides.
How about you, Todd?
What's your question?
How many people do you know that might have committed suicide?
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, but I would generally say 10 to 15, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 12 or 13 people that I personally knew in the program who have taken their own lives since.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, we don't really, I mean, most of the kids that we knew in group, we haven't heard anything about. It's just the few that we've heard of that we can say, well, yeah, that many have committed suicide, but who really knows how many
Well, I know that Wes Vager had done an evaluation of suicides, and I think he had like 40 listed on his website that he was able to document. There were at one point 50,000 children that passed through the Straight Inc. doors.
Yeah.
And even though Straight Inc. was eventually shut down as a result of congressional decree, it still reestablished itself again and again in additional facilities that were managed in the same manner and with the same level of abuse,
right,
but just were put forward under different names in order to avoid the legal responsibility for the child abuse. And,
right, the shape-shifting spin-off programs, which are usually started by parents in the parent program. Once the parent program is shut down, then they usually cross town, change the name, and reopen under a different charter or something like that. But it's the same stuff.
Yeah, I wish I was more well-versed in what the names of those current programs are, but I'm certain that there are several still operating. And if you're interested, there's the website fornits.com lists several programs that still operate, using a lot of the same tactics that Straight used.
Now, the Straight model, it still seems to be in steady use and promoted and mimicked, even though adults should recognize this very egregious violations of human rights. Straight founder Melvin Sempler has spent quite a bit of time attempting to reopen the program under new names, along with Dr. Miller Dutton, the Atlantis Phoenix Institute, the New Jersey Kids Teen Challenge, which is in association with the Drug Free America Foundation, which was founded by the Semblers, or Florida Safe, S-A-F-E. And those are all Straight-related facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Newton was involved in the KIDS program, and it was in northern New Jersey. And the KIDS program was forced to settle a lawsuit after being sued for 254 counts of insurance fraud, and staff at KIDS received criminal convictions for beatings, and former KIDS clients have reported being beaten by Newton himself. And Reverend Dr. Miller Newton finally left Straits in the 1980s. Amidst Florida criminal and health investigations, and 20 years and $11 million in settlements with abused clients. He's later back now at Madeira Beach, Florida, calling himself Cat Father Cat Cassian, and he has been accused of sexual abuse of children under that name.
Yeah, he's just he's got a brutal reputation among the Straight survivors who were in the Florida program and know him from there. I don't know any people that were in the Kids of Bergen County program, but I am in contact with some of the people who were under Miller's control in the Florida Straight program, and he's got a really brutal reputation.
Marcus, do you want to tell us a little bit about whatever you want to share in regards to how you feel that the Straight program was abusive in your situation?
Sure. Straight used the techniques that were developed by the Communist Chinese and by the Soviets. It's a very systematic brainwashing regime that completely destroys a person's sense of their self and then rebuilds it with the the reality of the institution. In this case, it was to get kids off of drugs and not to, you know, assert the communist dogma, but it was the exact same techniques. In Strait, a child was completely, absolutely cut off from the world, cut off from anyone who had not already adopted this new personality and this new reality. We were all deprived of sufficient sleep. We were deprived of sufficient water, exercise. We were absolutely cut off from sunlight and fresh air. Our world was made to be the world. Our connection with the world was with group. And group consisted of 150 kids or so, 150, maybe 100, maybe more at times. But the vast majority of these kids had been brainwashed by the previous generation of kids. Your day started out at maybe 5:30, maybe 6 if you were lucky. Waking up in a host home with that is a family that had already been in the program long enough to be indoctrinated. You wake up very early. You have a bowl of cereal. You get taken to the building in time for your old comer to be driven to school or work. You're placed in a 10-by-10 room. You're not allowed to talk, you're not allowed to sit down, and there's probably 30 other kids standing in that room. And you stand there for maybe an hour or two, depending on what time you get dropped off. And then beginning at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're looking forward to 12 hours of confessions and confrontations. And just the absolute control of being in group. You're not allowed to walk around freely in the room. You are sitting in a blue plastic chair with your back up straight. When you want to go to the bathroom, you hold your hand up in front of you. And if it's during an appropriate time, every few hours or so, you're allowed to walk to the end of your row of chairs and turn around submissively, and someone with privileges will reach inside the waistband of your pants with their middle finger through your belt loop, turn their hand around, grab inside your pants, and walk you to the bathroom and watch you defecate or urinate and watch you wipe yourself. And at which point you'll stand up and turn around and submissively let them put their hand inside your waistband and walk you back to group. And that's about the extent of your freedom during the day until you confess sufficiently your guilt over smoking marijuana or whatever drug you happen to have been fond of. You know, brainwashing is based on establishing guilt in an individual and then rebuilding this new self. So, Todd, you want to help me out here?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what they did. The abuse began as soon as you got in there. They would you know, humiliate you and disempower you in ways, but their main tactic was to get inside your head and sort of take your ego, smash your ego, separate you from the idea you had of who you were as a person, and then, you know, they were somehow going to rebuild you into, you know, what they wanted you to be. But, I mean, during my time in straight, learned to repress my real self. There were certain parts of myself that I hid away out of sight of staff and the group. In straight, I was forced to adopt a sort of a pseudo-personality as a survival tactic. I couldn't really be myself. They didn't approve of who I was. That was the reason I was in there, because I wasn't going to, you know, serve their purposes or something. So they were going to remold me into something that was acceptable. But in order to do that, they have to basically mind rape you and invade your space so deeply that it's traumatizing. And
now we do have some information from licensing investigators that actually investigated the Strait Incorporated at the Greater Washington Springfield facility. And John Barrett, who was assistant director of licensure at that time, had been looking to see if Strait Inc. was in compliance with licensing regulations. And there were several issues that he identified at that time: behavior management with kids restraining other kids, close proximity confrontations or spit therapy, medical care, which was not delivered promptly after injuries, broken fingers, broken arm, injuries to feet, psychiatric care not provided, symptoms not evaluated, not treated, suicide watch not be appropriately done, and often done by children, other
children.
Well,
that's the thing. I mean, it was institutional slavery. I mean, the children were carrying out the, quote, therapy. You know, the executive staff was not around. I mean, maybe twice a week, you know, they would lead raps. Other than that, it was kids doing this work for these people profiting, you know. I mean, kids were doing all the...
Children were asked to abuse other children.
I mean,
But
here's another thing, is that the seed was shut down in the 70s by Congress for being too close to communist brainwash camps in Korea during the Korean War, because they used the same tactics as the communists did on our POWs who were prisoners.
And then Strait was shut down by Congress by another investigation, but yet we still had Bergen Kids reappearing,
and now
have Teen Challenge, which is currently trying to place a facility in my hometown, I would point out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just this repeating pattern, I mean, you know, that just continues to go on. And you know, it kind of boggles my mind that the people who were in the seed just moved across town in St. Pete and set up Straight across town, and it was basically the same program that Congress had just made illegal. But now Mel Sembler and his wife and some of the, you know, bigger players in the area were setting up this new program called Straight, and they wrote it to, you know, political fortune.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show the people operating it had connections with the rich white men who were kind of above the law. I mean, George Bush came to visit. The Reagans came to visit. They gave endorsements and did commercials and that kind of thing. The connections were pretty high up there. There is an article.
And this was in spite of known investigations that showed that children were exposed to strip searches by other peers, that there was inappropriate sexual touching and contact between peers, and also between children in the program and staff members. And, of course, there was child abuse by Reverend Newton Miller.
I mean, it seems to me that the child abuse was just, like, almost by design.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that was part of their formula for breaking you down.
And, Todd, you can talk us a little bit through what happens with the sleep deprivation, because they did that to you, did they not?
Right, yeah. I mean, I was at one point not going along with the program and being a non-compliant person sitting in group, you know, I would sit straight up in the chair and follow some of the basic rules, but I refused to motivate, and which was you had to sort of shake your arms and try to demonstrate how badly you wanted to talk about yourself and admit your guilt and stuff like that, and I just wasn't going along with all that. so, you know, slowly they began to put consequences on me to try to change my behavior, like just doing things to make me more uncomfortable, you know, like giving me military showers so that at night I had 30 seconds with the water on and 30 seconds off and then 30 seconds to rinse and stuff like that. And then ending up with sleep deprivation, which meant that on top of all my time in the building under intensive psychological duress, I was to be brought home and kept awake until 3 in the morning, sitting in a wooden chair with my back straight up, without my back touching the back of the chair. Well, my old comers took shifts making sure I was sitting up straight and staying awake until about 3 in the morning, when I could lay down, and I'd get to sleep until about 6 in the morning when I have to get up and head in for the building. So after about a week of that, I began to comply with the program. And I was about willing to do whatever they wanted after about a week of that.
Yeah, and that's the classic story in the Chinese communist camps. You know, you hear these stories and you think, well, why did you go along with it? And it's like you just don't have any idea of what it's like to be broken down and broken down and broken down to that extent where there's not a single minute of the day where you can really retreat into yourself and kind of regain your identity. The day is packed from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep. The day is packed with absolute control over your every action, and you're always being prompted to confess your guilt over smoking pot and admit that you hated yourself before you got into straight. I mean, you might have been having a good time in life, but you're going to be broken down and broken down until you re-picture your past and you say, oh, yeah, well, actually, I did hate myself. I actually did have a low self-esteem. I actually do feel terrible about smoking marijuana. But, I mean, that's not the truth. It's just you're going to sit in there and rot and be abused until you finally just say whatever you have to say to start making progress towards getting out.
To prevent the torture. So torture actually has a reason for it, and the reason is to exert power and sometimes to force confessions that are untrue. I understood that there were even instances where children were forced to admit drug usage they had not done, admit to incest that never occurred, admit to sexual situations that had never happened.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just think there's so much pressure on you once you're in there and you're so isolated and they control everything about your environment, including your vocabulary, the way you comb your hair, the clothes you're wearing, every physical move you make, that you want to can make things up if you have to make it easier on yourself, because that's obviously what they want. And I didn't so much do that, but I think I saw a lot of that going on around me. I mean, I had a significant amount of things I could talk about from my past that I could sort of embellish, but, you know, I didn't have to actually make up drugs or anything. But I think there was a lot of that going on just because the pressure you were under to try to, you know, get through the program and save yourself the trauma.
Sure, and that, again, goes along with the classic story of the Chinese brainwashing camps, where they would imprison doctors who had been in China for 20 years as a humanitarian service. They would be arrested and accused of being a spy. And here's an American doctor saying, or the one I'm referring to actually was French. Here's a French doctor. He's like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. And after weeks and weeks of not being allowed to sleep and of being screamed at and of being physically tortured, well, he eventually made up a whole new reality about his past. Well, actually, that letter he wrote to his friend, it was espionage, you know. He fabricated a whole new perspective on his past. And, again, as I say, it's hard to really describe, well, how could this happen? Well, all day long, you're listening to children confess this type of thing. You're not allowed to just talk in generality. You had to be very specific, you know. You can see some examples on Chris's website, survivingstraightinc.com, there's a couple of video clips of when George Bush came to visit the Florida program, and you can see, children describing a past incident and talking about how they feel about it. You're listening to that 12 hours a day, and the kids that aren't going along with it were being restrained and tortured even more extensively. So, I'm getting worked up here, Jeanette. Sorry about that.
That's okay. But in regards to where you are right now, is it important to you as a survivor to have those who actually did this violence against children and who clearly did psychological torture as well, sometimes physical torture to children, to have them acknowledge that they have done something wrong and that it was actually morally and ethically wrong?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest important parts of any abusive situation. One of the most important things for the victim is for the abuser to acknowledge their perpetration of abuse and make a formal apology. And that was the idea behind the letter that Chris wrote, and our petition can also be seen on her website. It's one of those things where, as a survivor, you're walking around in America, and the message you get is, well, you deserved it. You were a druggie. And it's one of the hardest things about being a survivor of this type of abuse is that it's approved by society. So if you go through a Chinese communist brainwashing camp, or you get abducted into an African guerrilla army, and you have this just unbelievably horrible, torturous experience, when you get out, the whole world is going to be behind you and acknowledge that was horrible. When you get out of straight, you have the American society saying, well, you deserved it. At least you're off drugs now. So there's no validation in our society, well, very little, except for programs like the one you're operating here. Thank you very much for inviting us. But
it's real true that they tried to act as if something the child did then made it possible for someone to basically psychologically torture them because they deserve to be tortured. And I guess the whole point here is that, or the human rights issue here is that no one deserves to be tortured and that torture is wrong and that any refusal on the part of authorities or medical personnel or psychiatrists or therapists to refuse to take seriously the psychological mechanisms that these perpetrators use to mistreat, degrade, humiliate, and psychologically harm the children. We need to make sure that people are accountable.
Well, there is a kind of a general feeling in our society that it's okay to do whatever you have to do to get kids off of drugs. And I think it's very similar to the general consensus that it was okay to exterminate the Native Americans because this was our country and God gave it to us. There's a very similar kind of fascist thread that kids shouldn't do drugs no matter what, and it's so evil that it's okay to use our enemies' tactics upon them. It's in the fabric of our society to kind of approve of whatever has to be done, and that's why these programs still operate. And I don't think they're quite as abusive as straight, but I don't know. And I'm sure there's people listening that do. I wish I was better educated on what the programs are like currently, but I'm sure that they are coercive. I know there are coercive programs still out there, and that's the thing. It's okay because you're getting kids off of drugs, you know. So it's okay.
But there is a great deal of concern that these programs didn't actually perform that function that people who went through the program actually used drugs more upon their leaving, or that perhaps they were not even drug users to begin with, and that this program left them psychologically damaged for life in ways that would have never happened had they gone to some other more humane, more compassionate care-related program.
Right, because they pushed the idea on you that you were chemically dependent whether you were or not. I mean, that's how they were making their money. So if you were chemically dependent, they were going to make money. So
yeah, it was it was explained as, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have a drug problem.
Right. Right, that was their circular logic that they would use on you when you stood up in group.
And they also did use the court system to force certain teenagers into the program, did they not?
Yeah, right. I myself ended up court-ordered.
Yeah, I was court-ordered, too.
So they were court-ordered to a facility that was actually being investigated for human rights abuses and child abuse. And yet you were sent there by the courts.
Right.
In spite of
that. At that point, you just kind of start to lose respect for, I mean, in the first place, I was having issues with authority, you know. But when I got this straight, I just kind of thought, well, I must have been right. These people are crazy, and I shouldn't have any respect for them, you know.
Yeah, it's sort of like, if you have a good idea, why do you have to torture someone into believing it?
Right. If it's honestly got worth of its own, why do you need to manipulate, coerce, or torture somebody into it? If it's good, they're going to naturally move towards it.
Yeah, it kind of brings up questions. Why is it so important to them that kids don't smoke pot? You know, what is it that happens when a kid smokes pot? What is it that they're so afraid of, you know? That's kind of a question in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, that occurs to me, too, because, when I was first smoking pot, I lived in California, and then I moved to Virginia, and the school system, the culture was a little more conservative, not quite as tolerant of my investigations into reality on my own terms, and I found myself in trouble with the school system really quick, and it was more like their reaction to my investigation into reality that gave me the idea that they couldn't be trusted because they were so unreasonable about me investigating somewhere outside of their realm of influence that I just thought, you know, these people are exhibiting fascist tendencies and waving the flag at me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me think, you know, something isn't right, and I trusted my own instincts and my own intuition more than I did any of the adults in my world, and I really think that, you know, got me into trouble.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the human rights. When you were a child, what was your understanding of what your human rights were?
Well, my parents did a good job of instilling respect for all humans and the rights of everyone into me when I was a small child. I mean, we drove around the American West, and my mom read to me the history of the Native Americans. She read out of Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee and some other books. Touch the Earth was one of them that I remember. And it was the history of the Native Americans. And they made sure I knew about the history of slavery in our country and all that type of thing. So, you know, I got a sense of sort of an egalitarian anarchism streak going in me. And by the time I was in the public school system, I just thought, you know, here's the same pattern again. It's the same thing. These people just want to control everyone. And it seems like the issue is that as long as people want to control other people, you're going to have human rights abuses.
In regards to your own efforts working with survivors, both of you are active in the Survivor Network. You provide some support, emotional support, to others who might have been survivors as well.
Yeah, there's quite a community of people struggling to understand what happened and resolve it somehow emotionally, I think.
Yeah, I'd say lately I'm more the one turning to survivors for emotional support rather than giving it so much.
Well, it can be both ways. You can need it one day and give it the next.
I mean, there's internet communities with message boards and things like that where people recount their personal experiences or talk about the principles involved, or, you know, so for some people it's a place to reconnect, and for other people it's a place of social activism. So, you know, there's quite a community of people out there with different perspectives and different ideas about, you know, what straight was and
yeah. Yeah, I would say there's several hundred people involved. I think Facebook has one, although I haven't looked at it. And I know there's the Fornets.com that has survivors of many different programs. But the vast majority of people that went through straight, this is a theory of mine, the vast majority of folks just don't talk about it. And I've heard that over and over again, and I've experienced that. When I first got out of straight, I wanted to talk to kids about it who were in there, and the consensus
and they didn't
was,
want to talk.
Yeah,
it's a form of dissociation to put distance between them and the painful experience, and it's a way of psychologically blocking it out and finding a safe place within your own mind for dealing with the torture.
Well, sure. One of the inherent aspects of the, you know, the program was you don't talk about what goes on in the group room. And if you do talk about it, you get started over. It's a big consequence because you want to get out as soon as you can. So it's kind of built into the brainwashing, is that, and it's called confidentiality. And I think
they call it confidentiality to not talk about how you were tortured.
Oh, sure.
Well, let me at least tell you, put on the program a little bit the definition of torture as defined by the United Nations Convention Against Torture, their statement in 1984, because I think it's important to put this out there, that what the definition is according to the United Nations. And the United States is both a country that both signed and ratified the UN Convention Against Torture called CAT, C-A-T. And so the United States has agreed as a nation that this is the definition for torture on the international scale. And I'll read it directly from their manual. Torture means any act by which severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental, is intentionally inflicted on a person for such purposes as obtaining from him or a third person information or a confession, punishing for him for an act he or a third person has committed or is suspected of committed, or intimidating or coercing him or a third person for any reason based on discrimination of any kind, when such pain or suffering is inflicted by or at the instigation of or with the consent or acquiescence of a public official or other person acting in an official capacity. It does not include pain or suffering arising only from, inherent in, or incidental to lawful sanctions. So one of the things about torture is that it's intentionally inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
There is a purpose behind it, and that there is a government authority that either consents or acquiesces to allow it to happen. And in Straight Inc., that was clearly the case, that government agencies did not shut down these programs even after abuse was demonstrated by multiple complaints.
In fact, they did the opposite by endorsing it.
They actually endorsed it. We had officials in our government actually endorsing it publicly on the television and meetings, providing financial support, governmental grants going to these facilities, insurance payments to the organizations based on government programs, and also even judges who then ordered children into facilities that were abusive,
mm-hmm.
even with a history of abuse known to them through the investigation process. So,
yeah, the interesting thing is that when you torture a child because he or she has used marijuana or maybe drank alcohol, but most of us smoke pot as our drug of choice. But when you torture a child for smoking pot, it's called love, you know. In straight, it was called tough love, and the big motto was positive peer pressure, kids helping kids. It sort of turns everything upside down.
They rename the torture into something else.
Yeah.
Like with the Holocaust, it was the cleansing of the nation, you know, to kill all the Jews.
Right.
So they just put a different name on it, and then they make it acceptable.
Some kind of Orwellian doublespeak, like in 1984. That's exactly right. Honesty is lying and all that.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it was in straight. Everything was the opposite of what it really was. But you couldn't admit that, and you had no way to express that.
Yeah. And
you were
depowered
as a child because you had your civil rights were not fully enforced because you were a minor.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was no recourse. I mean, if your parents had been duped, you were out of luck.
But we also had parents who were duped and then couldn't get their kids back.
Uh-huh.
And had found their own rights severed by straight, and straight took over guardianship of their children, preventing them from getting their children back when they wanted to get their children back.
That is really scary.
That
happened to several of the Canadian parents.
Yeah.
Their Canadian children were caught here in the United States, put in straight, and then they couldn't extradite them back to Canada.
That was an inherent part of the program, was brainwashing the parents. And upon your first meeting, if you were a concerned parent and you went to straight to talk to the executive staff about putting your kid in there, if you showed any signs of rebellion or questioning of their methods, I believe that you would be refused to put your kid in there. You had to show a willingness to be brainwashed, because a parent who was going to stand up and question the abuse and actually call the abuse for what it was would be a threat to their whole, you know, it would be sort of like pulling the curtain back on the Wizard of Oz, you know.
Right.
So if you were a parent, you had to be willing to be brainwashed to get your kid in there, you know. And that's a big question people come up with, is, well, where was the parents through all this? And I say, well, the parents were brainwashed too. You know, a lot of people I talk to have this reaction like, well, the parents were all negligent, and I believe that's true. But there was, you know, that was back in the 80s, there was this hysteria, and I think it came in large part to the Drug-Free America's media campaign, and that hysteria in society kind of made it where you thought your kid was going to die if they experimented with drugs, and, you know, when you feel like your kid's life is in danger, you are in a desperate place. And these people took advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
They took advantage of that, and they turned it upside down and inside out.
Right. I mean, they probably literally told the parents that your kid is chemically dependent and is going to die if you don't put him in the program.
Yeah.
But the reason they did that was that they wanted to keep the child for as long as possible, to run the insurance money, to get every possible penny out of the parents and the insurance company, and that they would keep making statements about how horribly needy the child was of their services in order to keep the child in the program and prevent the child from actually telling the parents what was really happening.
Right.
Yeah, well, the longer each individual program was, the more slave work they could do for these people profiting off it, the more newcomers they could abduct into the program. So you might have been off drugs for a year and a half, but they're not going to graduate you until they have enough oldcomers to cover the newcomers coming in.
It's not just a money thing either, if I can interrupt for a second. It's not just a money thing either, because they're basically changing your entire mindset, which is going to affect you politically and socially for the rest of your life if their goals are achieved, you know? So there's more at stake than just money.
Do you think their goals were achieved with some people that became peer counselors?
I think with some people that they achieved what they wanted to achieve, and with others, you know, they made enemies that you know, are never going to forgive them. But I think that there was more to it than just money. I think they were looking for political power, social control, and money.
So for those that they got political power or social control over, do you think those persons went forward to continue programs in the future?
I think some of them did.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. There needs to be a massive survey done of survivors of STRAIT. You know, there needs to be some doctoral program or something that could fund the research to look all these people up and find out, how, you know, how's it been recovering from the brainwash, you know, and ask people, do they even let themselves think about it? Because a lot of people on these internet support groups, if you want to call it a support, I have kind of an allergy to that word, support group, but the vast, I mean, it's real common for people to not think about it for 20 years, as if they've been hypnotized or something. And then after 20 years, there's enough separation where they can let themselves remember it, and then it's like a floodgate opening up, and all these memories come back. I mean, we don't know how people are doing, you know? I know there's a few hundred on these internet groups, but that's a few hundred out of how many thousands and thousands, you know?
Right.
Well, you guys could potentially reach out to those victims, those survivors, and try to get an understanding of how they are doing now.
Right. I think that's a good idea. I mean,
we might want to facilitate that so that we know how our victims of torture are surviving here.
Right.
Because
there
has not been an official acknowledgement, really, by our government that this torture happened and that it happened with government acquiescence.
Right. Well, there
and
are powerful
sometimes
people
with government grant money to make it happen and with orders from courts to make it happen.
Right. Well, there
and
are
then
powerful
again,
people. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, kind of like what we were talking about today, Todd, is a lot of people survive by not letting themselves remember that they took part in this abuse and by blocking out the memories of being abused and brainwashed. So part of me is a little squeamish of looking these people up and saying, hey, do you remember me from STRAIT? You know, I would hate to kind of induce a nervous breakdown because that's not just out of the question. I mean, some people survive by blocking out the memory. So,
And then I remember that we had discussed this previously, that those who were coerced into becoming those peer counselors, those old comers, they actually had to perpetuate abuse against others. And then, of course, there's the ethical reality when they have to face what they actually did to someone else.
Right.
And this is not unusual because I was with torture survivors that someone who controls the victim would make the victim hurt another person. And I see that the child soldiers in Uganda face that when they are been asked to kill somebody and they know they would be killed if they didn't do it. And they're forced into it, and then they have to live with that reality of the horrors that they might have, atrocities that they might have actually performed. And yet they were children, and they were in a controlled situation, and they were tortured and forced into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the few things I think is worse than going through STRAIT. And like I was saying, everyone can recognize that as an evil perpetrated against someone. And the way it's different from STRAIT, again, to reiterate, the abuse is justified by society as, you know, it might have been abuse, but at least you're off drugs. And I hate to say, well, at least the people abducted into the Uganda army, you know, at least they have it. It's recognizable as a horror story, but I'm mincing up my words here. I'm just saying it would be so nice if we could have more acknowledgement from the people involved. I want to thank Richard Mullinax, who's the one executive staff member who's come forward and apologized for his abuse, And he's taking responsibility for it fully, in my opinion. And it's been one of the most important things in my healing, is having someone say, yeah, you know, you're right, it was wrong. Because until that, I mean, I knew it was wrong, but when you finally hear from your abuser, yeah, they were wrong, then you don't have to make that fight anymore. You're not struggling inside yourself and in your mind thinking what you would say if you had a chance to them, because they're just finally acknowledging it, and you can let that little bit go. So to get these apologies, I feel, would be so important for our survivor community, because it would finally let us, like, let that part of the fight go, and then we can get on with all the rest of the healing, just figuring out what is our integrity and what is our relationship to, well, just all the other ways that healing can take place.
I have another caller, so I'm going to see who we have on the line here and see if I can get him to, or her. I have a new caller. I'm trying to acknowledge him. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? You're on the line.
Hello,
do you have a
you?
Question for us in regards to Straight Ink and the abuse there?
Well, I was a client there, and I just wanted to sort of call in and say thank you for...
Oh, well, yes, as you know, I've been working on this for decades, and so. But did you want to share any of your own experience? You're on the live on the line now.
I would like to say that everything that you know that you guys are talking about right now, just kind of reiterating that it's very real, and it did happen, and it does still happen. And I'm not sure who the Teutoning are you have online, but I'm sorry, it's really hard for me to do this right now.
That's
but,
okay.
Well,
take your time.
You
take your time and only say what you feel comfortable with.
But all of those things did happen, and like you guys were talking about, you know, just having people realize that it's real, you know, like some acknowledgement,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, validation.
Would some acknowledgement or validation from our government officials assist you in your healing process?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, even right now, me talking, you know, about this and knowing that people are hearing me is difficult, and it's been,
yeah.
You know, it's been forever, and
yeah.
And I just some kind of acknowledgement that I think more so that you know that it's still happening,
yeah.
And you know, to some degree, and that you know all of the things that they talk about in the news about how people are having their rights taken away, and you know these things that happen in other places and what they think are other countries, it's happening right here,
yeah.
You know, and it has been happening here for a long time to our own children,
yeah.
You know, and it's whenever
now,
I hear something.
In regards to our responsibility as a nation to protect our children, can you speak to that issue, how important it is for government officials to protect children from abuse here in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's extremely important regardless, but I think the idea that some things in this country are so much more heavily regulated, you know, than the teen rehab industry, you know, by the government, you know. I mean, if we could at least get someone watching, you know, regardless of what they think they might see, if we could just get somebody watching it, you know, that would be something in my
government regulation of the teen rehab centers and wilderness camps.
Right.
To actually
right.
get them actually regulated and licensed so that someone has control over them.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And in regards to an apology, how can an apology help, and who should an apology come from?
I don't know that for me personally I would be looking for an apology. I feel that I've come a long way in my life, and you know, made a lot of progress, and a lot of who I am today, you know, is because of what I went through. And I do look at that in a positive light. I just, not so much an apology as an acknowledgement, and just some sort of system to prohibit the future, you know, incidence of this sort of thing. You know, it needs to be stopped. You know, I'm not looking for any kind of vengeance or justice on my part. I don't want it happening to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else's children. None of my children. I have children now. You know, none of my children's friends. You know, I never want to be approached with something like that because heaven help them. You know.
Yeah.
Are you aware that
they have currently started a program based on the Bergen Kids program in Canada, and they have two programs now in Canada that they've opened up, and thousands and thousands of children are now going through that program, doing the exact
uh-huh.
same thing to those children they did in Bergen County and New Jersey to the kids and kids.
Is that the Alberta Adolescent Recovery Center?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, the ARC, they call it.
ARC.
Yeah, the AARC. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I've heard of that before. I know there. Even since I got into, you know, talking with people online and in the forums, that there, you know, there's all sorts of offshoots.
Mm-hmm.
It does. From what I see, it has become, I guess, somewhat smaller. I don't know. Can you guys confirm that?
It's hard to tell. It seems like there's more and more programs, but. You know, I don't know what the sizes of these programs are.
Yeah, I think it's real appropriate that the first program was called The Seed because it introduced this coercive technique that the communists developed. It introduced this reality that it's okay to coerce kids. It introduced that into our society, and it is kind of like when you chop off the head of the dragon and two more heads come up, it's pretty insidious. It's pervasive, and I'm not an expert on the current programs, but I do think it's appropriate. They started out as The Seed
and seeded it all over. Well, they actually had intentions of spreading this internationally. And they have started. They tried to start programs in Italy. They tried to start programs in Finland, also in Australia and Jamaica and Canada. Of course, they have programs currently operating in Canada.
And there was one in Costa Rica.
So this is Costa Rica. That's right.
I think Mexico. There's one in Mexico.
And Mexico. That's right.
Yeah.
And so their concept was to spread this abusive rehab program to all other countries and bring this torture scenario to children in other countries and make a lot of money doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bottom line is that people financially benefited by doing this abusive, degrading treatment of children.
Right, and the Semblers really benefited politically too.
Yes, they also.
That's one of the reasons I think we're having such a hard time getting validation is because the Semblers are so powerful.
Now, Straight founder Melvin Sempler was George W. Bush's first term and extremely wealthy American ambassador to Italy, and
right.
former ambassador to Australia.
Right.
And he was heavily into real estate and had land holdings all over the United States and was a powerful political ally and fundraiser for many politicians, the Bush family in particular.
Right. So it's important for him that he paint Straight as America's savior of America's children, you know?
Well, as the Bushes called it, it was one of the points of light.
Well, they continue to maintain it's a safe and legal way to prevent drug use, but yet many ex-Straight victims and survivors would say that they did more drugs be able to run away from the trauma that they experienced in that program.
I would say I did that myself. After Straight, I took all the drugs that came my way trying to erase the experience because my backwards logic that I was thinking at the time was if Straight brainwashed me not to do drugs, then somehow I would do drugs and erase the brainwash that way. I know that's backwards
finally
now.
Getting away from that coercive authority and control and dominance.
Yeah,
you
I kind of went into
and did the exact opposite of what they were trying to make.
Yeah,
you
I
do.
Actually intentionally went into a nihilistic, self-annihilating state of mind where my goal was to annihilate myself because I really needed to get away from the pseudo personality that I had to adopt in straight as a survival mechanism. But I had taken it on, and it had become who I was, and my real self was atrophied somewhere down deep inside, and
now,
I almost had like a pseudo-split personality going.
Now, and it's not uncommon for a young person, a child, exposed to torture to split their personality in order to survive the experience. I mean, that is a common reality. And also the fact that many used even suicide to get away from the memories of what happened in Strait.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you would probably say that many have trouble accepting therapy because they're very distrustful of anyone claiming they're going to give them therapy.
Oh, for sure.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
One of the main problems that you had when you came out of Strait is that you know you needed some kind of help, but you couldn't seek any help because you couldn't trust anyone.
Right, trust was a big issue.
And especially because as you got to higher phases and were going back to school or back to work, everybody in the society seemed to condone what was happening to you. So the betrayal is societal. The whole society committed this crime is the way it feels.
Yeah.
And also, very importantly, your family was involved in that betrayal.
Right, so it's just everyone you know and trust and who was supposed to be loving and protecting you and nurturing you has turned on you in some brutal fashion, and, you know, by the time you get done with that, you just don't know how you're supposed to relate.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like you're almost better off to not realize you were brainwashed, because once you realize you actually were brainwashed, then you start wondering, well, what is my integrity? You know, I was willing to let my psyche be destroyed just in order to have basic human connection. I was willing to let myself be completely won over by this institutional personality. You're almost better off never realizing that, because when you get out of Strait, there's no deprogramming where they sit you down and say, now listen, you've been brainwashed. We've been calling abuse love. Now we want to just set it straight. What you experienced in there was brainwashing and abuse, and now you're going out into society where that's not appropriate. They don't give you that. If you go out and question that on your own, that's just a recipe for disaster. So when I hear about suicides, I have no question in my mind why, because the self that you adopt in group is useless if you question it. If you don't question it, I think you can go through your life, you know, thinking, well, yeah, I'm clean and sober ever since Strait. You're better off not questioning it, because once you do, it starts unraveling, and you wonder, well, I was actually abusive in there. Oh, I was actually abused. I was brainwashed. Well, what is really me? What is the real authentic me? Where did that go? And I'll tell you, it's a lot of times it looks like there's just not a real authentic self to work with. You know, so you go to the psychologist, and it's not like, here I am. There's been this continuity of myself since I was born up until now. It's like, here I am. I've had the last 20 years wondering if there's anything substantial and integral about my inner self. It's a complex that you're not supposed to be, you know, struggling with as an adult in American society. It's hard to want to be an American taxpayer when America took my personality, you know. It's hard to really put your shoulder to that wheel, you know. You're better off just not even questioning it, you know. You're better
in
off
in some
just,
ways.
Well, yeah, I can't say I would rather. It's not like I would rather be brainwashed, but
right.
Again, it's like I think people survive by not thinking about it, and I think I respect that, you know, because
yeah.
You can be functional. You can have your family, be happy, pay your taxes, and, you know, donate to Drug Free America Foundation and just not question your integrity.
Right,
you
might be acting and behaving compulsively, but maybe that's a better way for you to live than realizing what happened to you and then having to deal with that.
Yeah.
Now, might that also be especially true for those who were old comers who did a lot of abuse of other people and need to be able to somehow justify their actions and not look at their actions as being torture and abuse of others?
That's right.
And so the only way they can really, you know, face, they can't face it, so they supplement it underneath and they hide from it and they block it out and they act like it didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. I think that's very true. You know, what we learned in there was we learned how to be abusive. And the first few years after straight, I was really reeling in my, you know, nervous breakdown of trying to figure out what is my self. And I still have abusive tendencies. You know, I still, when I'm in emotional pain, I will still shout and criticize just like I was in straight. And this is after being aware of that tendency for 20 years. And it's probably more information than I should expose on a radio show, but this is also my programming from straight, is to absolutely reveal my insides, you know?
Confession.
I don't even remember my original point now. Just it's sort of like, yeah, look how messed up straight was. See how messed up I am? That's proof.
Well, I wanted to let you all know that at least I, as a human rights advocate, believe that children in the straight program were essentially tortured. They were certainly subjected to cruel and demeaning and degrading treatment, and that I do believe that that was a violation of our international obligations under the Convention Against Torture. And I think it's also a violation of U.S. law, many U.S. laws. But since I come to things using an international perspective, I wanted to let you know that under CAT, under the Convention Against Torture, there is no statute of limitations for torture. And so, therefore, a torture case that happened 20 or 30 years ago is still viable in front of the international community as a torture case. And
yeah,
so,
it's just not viable in the United States because
the United States has all these statutes of limitations for everything, and they don't have a statute. They don't have a statute for torture under U.S. law. There is no Title 18 statute of torture.
Right,
and so therefore you would have to come under abuse or under something. And many of our straight survivors try to bring their cases under child abuse, which, of course, there's a longer statute of limitations for. If you were a minor when being tortured or sexually abused or physically abused in straight, you had at least a possibility of bringing it into a federal court or a state court based on child abuse. But for those who don't have the ability to face that long court battle or money or resources to hire an attorney willing to do those very, very tricky court proceedings, it's very, very hard. And I many years ago, I mean, like over a decade ago, at one point, there was a group of very committed family court judges who had been seeing the cases. They had been actually sitting as judges on the cases, and the abuse was being brought in front of them. And they were reeling from the realities of what had happened on U.S. soil, and found it very hard when they decided in these trials, and juries were often involved, there were damages awarded to the victims for the abuse that they suffered. And then the victims tried to collect the damages that the court had ordered paid to them. And the courts found out that the perpetrators had switched their bank accounts, changed their names, moved money offshore, hid it in a variety of shell operations through one real estate transaction after another, and eventually to offshore bank accounts, and the money disappeared. And the victims, although they had supposedly won damages, never got a red cent.
Yeah. Yeah, none of that surprises me. They have the protection. You know, they're above the law up until this point. I mean, I know they've been sued, but I don't know why there's not been a class action lawsuit long ago. All I can figure is they just got protection.
Well, we did try to put together a RICO suit about 10 years ago, and we had about 3,000, a civil RICO suit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 4-year statute of limitations on civil RICO, and unfortunately there was overwhelming government authority to get passed on that. So it ended up not going where it needed to go. And
right, that's been the problem all along.
That in itself is a story I could tell you, but...
Right.
I put together this program mainly to bring in front of the public again that the Straight Inc. legacy of abuse continues even today. For those who had suffered it, it didn't go away just because we closed the book on it. It still exists in people's lives. Each person, each individual victim has to deal with it in their own manner and in their own way and what works for them. But we as a society are not any stronger, any better, if we will not look at this legacy, this history of abuse, and find some way to prevent it from happening again. And I see that we are setting up additional programs, the teen challenges, going into gangbusters, setting up places all over the United States, and other countries are finding that, like AARC in Canada, are finding that they're having programs set up by the perpetrators that were accused of abuse here in the U.S. So it's very problematic that we are not ending the abuse.
Yeah, it makes you wonder about America.
Well, I want to thank you all for being on my show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette, for keeping
this
in the public eye, too.
Yeah.
Or the public
and
ear.
Do you have any last minute? We have about 10 minutes to go. Do you have any last minute notations to say to our audience?
Sure. A lot of the comparisons I've been making of the Chinese brainwashing camps to Straight, most of those comparisons came from a book written by Robert J. Lifton, and the title of the book is Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism, A Study of Brainwashing in China. And I highly recommend that anyone interested in coercive therapy get a hold of that book and read it, because it's pretty much a description of Straight. And he also describes some of the effects of going through this type of program. That brings up another article that Chris was telling me about that I think it was from Florida, when the Florida Straits were under question. One of the executive staff, I don't have the article in front of me, but one of the executive staff said something to the effect of, yeah, these kids will have problems later in life, but at least they're off drugs. And Chris's website is survivingstraightinc.com, and there's several newspaper articles in there, and she's committed to getting every published article onto her website. It's a huge resource. So if you're interested in researching Straight, that's a great place to look. And also, another great website is fica.net. It's F-I-C-A. He has several articles about Straight on there as well. And there's also for anyone from any coercive type of program, there's fornits.com. That's F-O-R-N-I-T-S. And then, of course, there's Wes Fager's website, thestraits.com. All those are great resources. And
I just wanted to plug Wes a little bit. I mean, we lost him. You know, he has passed away now, and so we no longer have him as a person to provide us that wonderful digital resource that he did in his website. But his website is still up. The Strait Survivors have put most of it up. And so do look at it, because it contains a lot of information. He was a very active and wonderful researcher on the subject.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, his son had been a survivor or victim, whatever. Todd?
I'd just like to add, I would recommend a book by Maya Salovitz,
mm-hmm.
Who has written for the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek, New York, Salon, New Scientist, Reason, and been a former producer of The Charlie Rose Show. She wrote a book called Help at Any Cost, How the Troubled Teen Industry Cons Parents and Hurts Kids. And it's all about this issue of the teen rehab programs and the abuse. And I would recommend that to anyone interested in the subject. And also, I'd like to add that if you can't find the website that Marcus mentioned, Fornitz.com, the full name of the website is Fornitz Home for Wayward Web Fora. And if you just Google that, it'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, there is some information on Medical Whistleblower's website as well.
Oh, yeah.
My website is medical. Whistleblower, no spaces, .viviti, viviti.com. And there is information mostly on the About page, because this is how I got into working with medical whistleblowers, was that I was trying to bring forward the child abuse issues in relationship to Strait and other abusive teen centers. And my website also has information about the Convention Against Torture and the obligations of medical professionals to report torture and abuse and mistreatment of children and adults. So you can check out our website. Also wanted to let everyone know that I have also a petition website. And you might want to sign our petitions asking for changes in our U.S. policy on rehabilitation of teens and their treatment in rehabilitation centers and wilderness camps. And my petition website is change, C-H-A-N-G-E, .com/medical whistleblower. And you will see a variety of petitions available there, some of which have to do with the care and treatment of children, and some of which have to do with mental health issues, all of which are related to Strait, Inc.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned before our online petition requesting an apology for the people that perpetrated Strait, the executive staff members and the politicians involved. There's a link to that on Chris's website, Surviving Strait, Inc., and it's an online petition you can read. There's been 430 online signatures, and that petition is also there.
And it was very healing for persons to realize that someone came forward and admitted that he had remorse about what he had done as a Strait peer counselor. And that was very helpful to all. And he may not have realized that just by coming forward alone, he could have made a huge difference in someone's psychological healing. And that we thank him for his courage for facing that and doing that.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah, yeah. I think my understanding is that he is willing to talk to anyone who was in there while he was on staff, and my understanding is that he does that on a regular basis, and I commend him. I mean, I don't know. That's one of the things about being a survivor is it's so emotional just talking about all this, to actually be active and get organized and actually do something requires a level of healing that I haven't quite got to. So I don't know how you do it, Richard, but thank you.
And so I only have 5 minutes remaining at this point, so I wanted to thank you all for being with me with Medical Whistleblower. We are located here in Lawrence, Kansas. We are coming to you live today via Blog Talk Radio. I am the executive director, and we work on issues in relation to human rights, most especially about human rights related to medical care and health issues. And clearly, this issue about Straight Inc. and its legacy of abuse is a health issue, a mental health issue, and a physical health issue. I wanted to make everyone aware that we are advocates to prevent torture and to acknowledge torture victims and the injuries that they suffer, to acknowledge also that those injuries are often lifelong, that one never erases torture from one's past, and one needs to move forward, and that the acknowledgement of the wrong is essential to healing. I wanted to thank our three guests today for having the courage to come forward and to share their stories with me and our audience today. And I want to ask you for your support for our petitions to the U.S. Congress and the U.S. President and to the Supreme Court and to the U.N., to make sure that torture does not occur on U.S. soil and that when it does, it is dealt with appropriately and that our country takes every effort to prevent torture from occurring on U.S. soil. So I thank you all.
Thanks.
And I hope that you will move forward with your advocacy and reach out to others and with your stories as just to hear your stories is healing to others.
Well, you're an inspiration, Jeanette. Thanks for having me on the program and allowing us to have a platform to speak about this.
Yeah, I can honestly say I've dreamed of having the chance to finally speak. So thank you.
And our lady friend here? Are you still on the phone? She's not. She's dropped off. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I think I'm going to be ending the show now. But I hope to have people recognize that the legacy of abuse doesn't end, and we do need to move forward to beginning again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeanette.